They were watching him closely. Did you notice that? That's the opening verse to a series of stories and parables of Jesus. On one occasion, when Jesus was going to the house of a leader of the Pharisees to eat a meal on the Sabbath, they were watching him closely. It has a sinister feel to it, doesn't it? And with Jesus, we kind of know that's probably with good thought. They were watching him. The history has been, and we just saw it last week, we saw the healing of the bent-over woman. Jesus healed on the Sabbath, and they were watching. And they didn't like it. They being the religious authorities of his day in the temple, and they raised objections. But it can also have a very faithful quality to it, can it? They were watching him. It's not new for Jesus. Obviously, last week they were watching him. They raised their objections. But think back to the beginning of his ministry. The first day, he's back in his hometown of Nazareth, and he stands up to read the scripture. And interestingly, it was open to Isaiah, and he read the words, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me to bring good news to the poor, release to the captives, recovery of sight to the blind." He goes on. He reads that passage from Isaiah. He closes the scroll. He sits down, and it says there in Luke chapter 4, all eyes were on him. They were watching. And then he opened his mouth, and he said, "Today, this scripture has been fulfilled in your presence." Today, release to the captives, good news to the poor, recovery of sight to the blind. Everything that Isaiah sort of foretold about somebody like Jesus, a Messiah figure, today, in your presence, it has been fulfilled. So it's not always a sinister thing that people are watching Jesus, right? We watch Jesus, don't we? I mean, that's what I get most often when I ask people about their Christian faith and what it's all about. Well, I'm just trying to do my best to follow Jesus. I'm watching him. He's my example. I'm going to try to do what he does, right? If he welcomes people, I'm going to try to welcome them. If he forgives a woman caught in adultery, I'm going to try to do the same. If Jesus does it, if it's good enough for Jesus, it's good enough for me. It's hard enough. I know that, right? Anyone who's trying to watch and follow Jesus knows it's not easy. So on this particular occasion, on a Sabbath, there's a banquet, a gathering. And there's two sort of teachable moments here that Jesus goes on to sort of open our minds and hearts onto a couple of things. One of them is, if you're invited, act this way. And the other is, if you're doing the inviting, do it this way, right? So he's speaking to us both as guests and as host, right? So the first one is a teaching about how to be a good guest. And what's his teaching there? What does he say? Karen just read it. You didn't know there was going to be a quiz. Yeah, did you say don't be pompous? Okay. That's a paraphrase, but I think you nailed it. Don't be pompous. Don't be full of yourself. Don't think too high. Sit at the lower end. And then if your host thinks you've sat yourself too far down the food chain, your host will come and move you up. And you'll be exalted rather than humiliated, right? So there's kind of this spectrum. And where do you sit? Do you sit up here with a guest of honor? Or do you sit down here with the servants? And Jesus says, humility, right? So this teaching, the heading in my Bible anyway calls these teachings humility and hospitality. So the first part to us as guests is about humility. So act in a way that's humble. Don't think too highly of yourself. Does anybody ever tell you that? That's why we come to church. Oh, what was that, Don? on a daily basis? Okay. That's good. Keep us humble, right? I have a friend. He's a Methodist pastor. He says the Methodists have this prayer for their pastor. It's like, Lord, you keep them humble and we'll keep them poor. Like, wait a minute. Why are we laughing at that? That's too close for comfort. So humility is a learned thing. But every once in a while, we need someone like Jesus to remind us, don't think so highly of yourself. Right? On the other hand, and this is where I really feel like there's an important message here beneath the text in a way. It's that your presence here matters. That's why I have this sermon title. I think it says presence matters, doesn't it? Presence matters. I like that way. That can be taken a couple of different ways. But one of the basic ways that can be taken is that your presence here matters. I think that's just so important for the church to offer that message to everyone. No matter where you are on the food chain, right? And I'm using that as a phrase, you know, from the lowest to the highest, from the most humble to the most pompous, your presence here matters. Has anyone told you that? Okay, turn to somebody and tell them, your presence here matters. Your presence here. Go ahead. Your presence here matters. Your presence here matters. I still remember a night I was at worship at Plymouth Church. I was sitting at a table. They worshiped around tables on a Saturday night. And one of the young Tim pastors there, one of the young Tim ministers, she just looked at me and said, Paul, your presence here matters. I'm really glad you're here. It was just like, wow. And you know what? I needed to hear that at that particular moment. I don't know how she knew that. I know she's a very spiritual person. She's very much in tune to these things, and I really appreciated that. So remember how that felt when someone told you your presence here matters. And think about sharing that affirmation with somebody. It's a beautiful thing, isn't it? That's the host of the meal coming up to you and wherever you're sitting and saying, your presence here matters. And then moving you to a place where you understand that your presence here matters. I'm going to move you from there to right here, because I want to make sure when you leave here today, you know that your presence here matters. Right? So humility is good, and it is a gift, and it teaches us things about ourselves and about how we relate to others and to the world and to Christ. But at the basic level of this is a message that it matters that I'm here. More than it matters where I'm sitting, quite frankly, it matters that I'm here. So then Jesus goes on, and this is where it gets challenging for me. He says to the one who had invited them, so we're moving from the humility piece and how to be a guest to the hospitality piece and how to be a host. And he says, when you give a luncheon or a dinner, when you have a feast, don't invite your friends or your brothers and sisters and your relatives or rich neighbors in case they may invite you in return. Wait a minute, isn't that the whole reason we send the invitations? You got to check the list of who's on the invite list, because you would think, if I'm ever invited, I want it to be to these places. That's how you make the list, right? Not so much. When you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind. That doesn't sound like a banquet. That sounds like work to me. Invite these people. The poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind. And you will be blessed, because they cannot repay you. For you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. Wow. This reminds me of my favorite sermon on a stick a couple of weeks ago. I'm going to say it again. I had to write it out because I couldn't remember. Walter Sullivan, a Benedictine, said, "The vocation of a Christian is to be annoyed, embarrassed, exhausted, and cheated, perhaps, for the sake of Christian hospitality." Right? If you're not annoyed or embarrassed, sometimes cheated, you're probably not doing it right, is what I hear behind this message of hospitality. If you're only inviting your rich neighbors who can repay you, you're really not pushing the envelope very far on your hospitality, are you? Right? Now, I don't know that every day we have to be annoyed and exhausted and taken advantage of, but we need to be opening ourselves, we need to open our welcome wide enough that it does get taken advantage of sometimes, right? Another, this will be on next year's sermon on a stick because I just thought it was great. It was just a little poster I saw somewhere, and it said, "Blessed is beyond your comfort zone." In other words, the place where you receive blessing is just outside your comfort zone. So you draw a circle of your comfort zone, and I'm comfortable here at church, and I'm comfortable with my friends, and I'm comfortable with my family, and I'm comfortable with some of my neighbors. I'll draw my line, so this guy's house is not included in it, right? We all have that neighbor. And so this is my comfort zone, but the place where I am blessed is just on the other side of that comfort zone. Think about that, right? I think that's what Jesus is saying with his invitation to hospitality here. Open your circle a little bit because it's just outside your comfort zone. That's where your blessing is going to happen to you. You think, I don't need to hear that today, right? More annoying teachings from the pastor. See, that's also my job here too, right? To annoy you and to exhaust you and to irritate you. as somebody once put it, to comfort the afflicted and to afflict the comfortable. That's the preacher's job. But above all, it's knowing that in extending this hospitality, we open ourselves up to all kinds of things, including abuse, and inconvenient phone calls right in the middle of worship, being taken advantage of, being lied to sometimes, cheated occasionally, right? But it's also that by opening ourselves up to that we also really know the presence of Christ and the blessing that God offers us. Not just on some future day of resurrection, as it says in there, but I think on today's day of resurrection. At this table, in this fellowship, and in our worship. Thanks be to God.